Our lunchtime conversation on this Friday is a complete recording of last night's Community Benefit Advisory Council public hearing, an information session on the historic gas plant redevelopment project, and the new stadium for the Tampa Bay Rays that turned into a very lively discussion you may have read about this morning. Let's listen to that recording now.
Hello, everyone. We'd like to get started. Good evening to you. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Erica Riggins. I'm the Public Information Officer for the City of St. Petersburg. And if you are here to talk about the Historic Gas Plant District Redevelopment Project, you're in the right place. We're all here for that, right? Yes, that's why we're here. And we have our Rays Hines team here with us representing the Hines Historic Gas Plant Partnership. Thank you for being here. In just a few moments, you will hear from them directly on the associated community benefits and a multi-million dollar plan that centers on affordable and workforce housing, employment and education opportunities, the impact and the participation for small businesses, minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, transportation improvements, public open spaces, public parking, and an intentional equity commitment worth at least $50 million. So once the Hines Historic Gas Plant Partnership concludes their impact report presentation, then we will turn these microphones over to all of you. And this is your opportunity to speak out. It's an exciting time. We want to hear your thoughts. We want to make sure you share those thoughts with our city leaders, with our Community Benefits Advisory Committee, and they are all front and center tonight. In fact, if you'll allow me, I'd like to introduce them to you and have them stand, starting with our 54th mayor of the City of St. Petersburg, Mayor Kenneth T. Welch. Please stand and be recognized. He also has his administration here. Our administrators are here. Will you please stand so that we can thank you for all your hard work every day? Our city council members in attendance, please stand. Thank you for your tireless efforts. Thank you. Please stand and be recognized. And, of course, all eight members of our Community Benefits Advisory Committee, will you please stand and be recognized? Thank you. So over the next few months, this nonpartisan board will advise Mayor Welch, City Council, and of course, all of you from all of our communities on the proposed community benefits that are linked to the historic gas plant redevelopment. And that process begins right now. So here's how tonight will work. Following their 30-minute presentation, dozens of community members will be called to the microphone here to my left for the public comment period, all selected at random. Each person, very similar to city council meetings, will have 3 minutes to speak. The mic will be muted at the conclusion of the 3-minute period. And we're dedicating approximately 2.5 hours to your public comments, that public comment period happening tonight. So keep in mind, you also, however, for those who don't want to be public speakers tonight, you have the option of starting tonight through December 31st, making your opinions known online. We have a QR code that you can snap with your phone. We also have printed forms that you can fill out tonight. And there are also, this is very important, starting January 9th, every Tuesday, there will be CBAC meetings where you can go and speak to the committee and make your voices known as well. So this is important. We want to hear from you tonight and over the next several months. This is just the beginning. We want to hear from you over the entire process. And with that, it is my honor to turn this over to the Hines Historic Gas Plant Partnership. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction. Let me add my appreciation to the CBAC, to the mayor, to city council members who are here, to Sophia for the delicious food, to Kawa for the coffee, to everyone who behind the scenes put this great event together for us. We really appreciate it. My name is Brian Auld. I am president of the Tampa Bay Rays, and it is my sincere privilege and honor to be up here representing this incredible team. To my left, we have Michael Harrison from Hines, Ms. Gwendolyn Reese from the African American Heritage Association, Evan Colas of Store and Studio for Architecture, and Andrick Frazier from Best Source. We all recognize the enormous responsibility that comes with having been selected by the mayor and through the RFP process to do what's right for the piece of land formerly known as Historic Gas Plant District. We have three main goals that we're going to talk to you about today. One is keeping Major League Baseball and the Tampa Bay Rays in St. Petersburg forever. Two, honoring the lasting and loving legacy of the Historic Gas Plant District, and three, making St. Pete an even better place to live, work, and play for everyone. With that, I'll turn it over to Michael Harrison.
Good evening, everyone, and really thank you for coming. It's a privilege to be here, and it's a privilege for us to be up here and be able to turn the mic over to you and be listeners for a couple hours. As Brian said, I'm Michael Harrison, and I'm responsible for the southeastern United States for Heinz, not to be confused with the ketchup company. We're a family-owned real estate company, third generation of ownership right now. We're privately held. We have about 5,000 employees in 30 countries. And more importantly, we've been doing business in Florida since the mid-80s and have completed projects in Pinellas, Hillsborough, and Pasco County. We know this part of Florida. We love being here, and we're excited to embark on this 20-year journey with you. One of the things that I think is important to understand, and I think, I mentioned it's a privilege to be here. Heinz is fortunate that we've done projects all over the world, and when it comes to doing a project like the Gas Plant District, which is going to be, somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 million square feet, built out over 20 years, we've had the good fortune of being involved in other city-defining projects around the world. And so, as Mr. Heinz used to say, we've made a lot of mistakes doing our projects. We promise you we won't make those same mistakes twice. One of the things that we think is real important for everyone to understand and come away with tonight is that this isn't about building a ballpark, and it's not about building housing or offices. For us, this is really about making and creating a placemaking destination and a village, really a city within a city. And one of the things that we've had the good fortune of doing as a company is we've developed all kinds of housing, affordable housing, market rate housing, condominiums. We're one of the largest office developers in the world. We've done significant amounts of retail, and as importantly, we've had experience putting those all together so that they work in a cohesive fashion. Next. One of the things that is really a hallmark and a commitment and a trademark for Heinz is our commitment to sustainability. ESG, environmental, social, and governance is really one of the core principles for our firm. And one of the things that we've spent a lot of time on is trying to figure out how can we reduce our carbon footprint. Heinz has made a commitment that we're going to achieve carbon operating neutrality by 2040. One of the things that's going to be part of the Gas Plant District project is our proprietary timber office product that we call T3. It stands for timber, transit, and technology. What we're trying to do is create a place where people can work, live, and play in the same location. We're doing it with renewable forest timber, which can create and embody carbon and reduce the effect on our environment. We've spent a lot of time over the last 66 years focused on sustainability. We've earned the Energy Star Partner of the Year from the EPA more than any other real estate company in the world. We have more LEED certified projects than anybody in the United States, and we're focused on well and fitness and all of the things that are going to make this village a more livable place. We have a significant commitment to affordable housing as part of this proposal. We submitted our proposal about a year ago, maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, and we did it in response to the mayor's 23 guiding principles. And one of the challenges that any developer would have with this is that because of the public nature of the process, we weren't able to sit with City Council. We weren't able to sit with the mayor or staff or you to really say, what do you mean by this these principles? And so what we did was we put together a proposal that included a $50 million commitment to intentional equity. We put together a proposal that included a significant amount of affordable housing. And then after the selection process occurred, after a presentation in this room in early January of last year, we had the opportunity to sit with the mayor and the staff and really understand how do we take those 23 guiding principles and fine-tune them. In the process, our commitment to affordable housing went up by 40%. We understood, that it not only needed to be a commitment on site, but we needed to commit to build and support affordable housing off site in St. Petersburg. We've brought in an affordable housing partner, Dante's Partners, that's going to help us with the dedicated standalone affordable development that's going to occur on our site. We've tried to round the team into shape so that we can address all of those concerns. I mentioned it earlier when someone asked me tonight, you know, what do you expect to get out of this meeting? I think what we've got right now is a block of clay. We've proposed, you know, what we think is the right solution. We need your help to mold that clay. And with that, what I'd like to do is introduce Ms. Gwendolyn Reese to come to the talk to you about how we've focused on the history of the gas plant district, how we've focused on our interactions with the descendants of the gas plant district, and how we're going to be committed to fulfilling those broken promises.
Thank you, Michael. Phenomenal poet and author Maya Angelou said, "You can't really know where you're going until you know where you have been." Nelson Mandela said, "Education is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world." Our histories and our stories humanizes us, but most people don't know the history and stories of the gas plant and Laurel Park neighborhoods. The Hines Rays redevelopment team is intentional about preserving the rich culture and heritage of the neighborhood and telling and retelling the stories of the people who lived there. The area known as the Gas Plant neighborhood was the second African American neighborhood formed in St. Petersburg between 1890 and 1900. Originally known as Cooper's Quarters, it ran along 9th Street South and First Avenue. Like the earlier neighborhood of Peppertown, Cooper's Quarters was also settled by the influx of African Americans coming to the area to complete the Orange Belt Railway. As the population of Cooper's Quarters grew, the neighborhood expanded and became known as the Gas Plant neighborhood. This was because of the natural gas cylinders that dominated the skyline. According to an article in the June 12, 1914 edition of the St. Petersburg Daily Times, the municipal gas plant was originally intended to be built on city lots in the Bayborough area. But due to protests from property owners in the vicinity, it was decided by the Commissioner of Public Works to find another location. The commissioner was quoted as saying, "I realize that a large number of good citizens are impressed with the belief that such a location will not only seriously affect both the health and comfort of the residents over a large portion of the city, but would naturally depreciate the value of their property." The property, as we now know it, was purchased from a formerly enslaved person. His grandson is here with us tonight, who was also a philanthropist and a pioneer of this city, and his name was Elder Jordan. The Gas Plant neighborhood was a bustling community where many of us worked, lived, played, and died. It was the home of the first school for black children, Davis Academy, later named Davis Elementary, which opened in 1910, and the private McCrae School. Bordered to the west by the gas tanks and to the east by Webb City, this vibrant, flourishing, mixed-income neighborhood was devastated first by the interstate and then completely gutted with the construction of the baseball stadium, now known as Tropicana Field or the Trop. According to research conducted by Gypsy Gallardo, the building of the stadium would require the bulldozing of 285 buildings, the relocation of 9 churches, and 500 households. It would cause 30 businesses to move or close, uproot organizations such as the Masons, and demolish 80-plus investment properties, many black-owned. But baseball was not what was originally promised to the residents of the neighborhood. In 1978, the City Council passed a resolution declaring the neighborhood a redevelopment area and adopted a written proposal that included affordable housing and an industrial park that would create between 620 and 688 new jobs. The plan was opposed by many, with the primary criticism being that it was designed without asking the people most affected for their opinions. Residents were not consulted until the plans had been drawn up. Many voiced that they were afraid they couldn't afford to live anywhere else, but the concerns went unheeded. According to Gallardo, in 1960, 90% of Black St. Pete lived, socialized, shopped, and went to church within 2.5 square miles. By 1990, the mass was scattered over 25 miles, and a once socioeconomically diverse community was splintered and would never return to its heyday. In 1984, the two gas cylinders, which served as neighborhood landmarks for so many years, were dismantled. This was the beginning of the end for the gas plant neighborhood. In July 1986, six of the nine members of City Council voted to build the stadium on the site. In 1988, the city acquired Laurel Park, a low-income housing complex, from the Housing Authority to build a parking lot for the stadium. Once again, Black families were moved from their homes and dispersed throughout the community, many times losing the support systems and safety nets that were integral to the health and well-being of families. In 1987, construction began. In March 1998, the Devil Rays played their first official game at Tropicana Field. And now, 25 years after the first game was played in the stadium, 36 years after construction began on the stadium, 37 years after six of the nine members of the council voted to build the stadium on the site, 39 years after the two landmark gas cylinders were dismantled, 45 years after the City Council passed a resolution in 1978 declaring the neighborhood a redevelopment area and promised in writing a plan that included affordable housing and an industrial park, the Hines Rays team finds ourselves embarking on the largest redevelopment project ever undertaken in South St. Petersburg. We're embarking on this with enthusiasm, integrity, and a commitment to fulfilling the goals of the contract, of talking with the people who were most impacted then and now, listening to the opinions and concerns of the community, engaging residents in the process, and most of all, bringing the former residents, business owners, and their descendants together to celebrate, commemorate, and preserve the rich culture, history, and heritage of these once vibrant neighborhoods and the people who live there. With us tonight, as I look around, and I won't name you, but please stand, are many of the residents, former residents, descendants, and business owners of the gas plant area who've been working with us for more than a year. And there are some who were not able to stand, but we thank you for being here with us. We look forward to continually working with you as we move forward on this much needed and very much hopeful project. And now I would like to introduce to you an architect and a member of our team, Everett Colas.
Thank you, Ms. Gwynn, for always setting the tone for us to understand. As you look at that slide there, you have a before image and then an after of a vision of 20 years from now. But that before image where you see parking spaces, comes with a rich history that we want to honor. And as development team and personally a designer, we understand that design and policy have to come together to make sure we have equitable placemaking. We thank the mayor and his staff for giving us 23 principles just to sort of guide us as we design and think about the community. I'm going to go through a series of slides really focusing on several projects, several buildings here, but the community benefits that have to do with this project. The first thing we did is listened, as Ms. Gwynn mentioned. We've had two dinners with a few of the descendants, and in the first dinner, they mentioned it was a vibrant community, and within 5 minutes, I can get to any essential use. And as planners, we started to think about the idea of a 20-minute neighborhood, which is the first act of having low carbon emissions, because you don't have to rely on cars, because from walking or biking or wheelchair accessible, you're within 20 minutes of an essential use. Housing diversity would be along those essential uses. Being able to age in place from daycare all the way to senior living. Sports facilities, safe streets that will be implemented and designed by our St. Pete's Complete Street Design Plan. 14 acres of green space. And we understand that we need to also not only focus on our site proper and be insular, but we have to go out and see how our site will affect the neighborhoods, the existing neighborhoods around us. So sort of the plain and simple planning is to make sure we bring back a street grid that has the wide sidewalks that St. Pete is known for, and then that we have physical connections, as you can see here, with the 16th Street corridor in red, with an underpass plaza connecting directly to Campbell Park, so we have a physical connection to South St. Pete that we lost some of because of the highway. But also, we set apart zones. This is just a diagram of what sort of inspired us. For example, the Warehouse Arts District is known for its vibrant art community, so we wanted to have an artist and maker space that can have business incubators that speak to that Third Avenue corridor and that sort of connection. The Deuce is Live, as we've learned from so many of you and also Ms. Gwynn, was the entertainment district originally in the historic gas plant. So whatever uses we have on our main site, we want to make sure it speaks to the Deuce is Live corridor. And if we were to get a bit more in detail, and I'll sort of walk you through this sort of example of a wellness neighborhood versus pointing at every use, you could imagine if you're walking along the Pinellas Trail now, our buildings are facing the trail, so it's quite activated if you're jogging, biking, or simply walking. You could and you would encounter a neighborhood grocer, because we understand that to have full health, you gotta have access to groceries. And of course, like St. Pete, within a half mile of our city, you're near a green space, so we'll have pocket parks. Some pocket parks will be activated with a community garden. Some will be more quiet because we will honor those who have died here, and so the Oak Lawn Cemetery will be a park that memorializes the folks who were there. The sort of long green space you see going diagonal on the slide is, of course, Booker Creek, which I'll say a bit more about. And of course, there'll be a neighborhood clinic there also. And I'll talk about the entertainment spaces a little bit later. This image shows it in sort of full three dimensions. You can get a sense of the green spaces and the buildings being balanced. And one of the things that we want to do and sort of placing these buildings is to make sure we have a proper gateway, a gateway that's really about our values as a city. And that gateway perhaps will be anchored by the fact that we'll have the Woodson African American Museum here on this site, which talks about 21st century education that not only relies education in the classroom proper, but also in the galleries. And it's always been the right time to talk about the full American history, which is African American history. And across from it, we'll have an entertainment venue, and that entertainment venue would, of course, bring in world-class performers here. We like to think perhaps it could be the South by Southeast here in St. Pete. But outside of just bringing world class, there'll be opportunities for the youth to understand about rigging, staging, lighting, and working in some of the sound rooms. So all of our buildings, we want to have a duality that gives back to the community. A typical image of our game day street, which shows you the sort of sensitivity of this ballpark The larger areas will be set back so you can really enjoy the street activity. And the streets temporarily would be closed to vehicles to make sure that if it's a game or if it's a graduation, the let out could be enjoyed and could be a real community activity. And as we look at an image like this, I've been talking about the spaces in between, but I want to take a moment to talk about the buildings. Michael mentioned this, but it's important to us as developers, designers, and builders that we understand that 42% of our building environment gives into the carbon emissions around the world. So we want to make sure that our buildings are done responsibly and to meet ideas of renewable energy, because we also understand that responsible building is also equitable, because you don't pass the costs to your tenants of a high electricity bill because you've built a poor building and it's leaky and they have to sort of pay a high Duke Energy bill. And then lastly, or just one more slide after this, the Brooker Creek becomes another idea for us to have environmental stewardship. We understand the creek goes out into the Bay Borough, so we want to work with Tampa Bay Watch and have a portion for our youth to understand how much nitrogen is in the water at all time or how much salinity is there. And outside of just staying within the seawalls, we'll have other green around the Brooker Creek so you can actually lounge. You don't necessarily have to have a ticket to the game or a key to the hotel, but you can enjoy these spaces. This is the way you belong, because we have 14 acres activated. This slide, before I pass it to Andrick, a Bet Source, if you look at everything yellow here, that represents housing. The downtown core today has about 10,000 residential units. At the end of this project, when all said is done, there will be another 6,000 added to this, so a 60% increase. So we're thinking about the current demand and adding a much more supply, because we understand that anything we do here in the next 20 years is about giving equitable opportunity for folks to live, eat, play, and learn.
Thank you, Everil. What Mr. Colas has laid out for you is an inclusive design strategy that is necessary in creating a community in which one can truly work, live, and play. An environment where the 72-year-old grandmother who enjoys taking photos of Florida's aquatic wildlife can stroll along Brooker Creek just as the sun begins to rise over the eastern edge of the Innovation District. An environment where the 36-year-old husband and father of three can plan a Wednesday evening date night, choosing from the many entertainment and locally influenced hospitality options that line Game Day Street. An environment where the 11-year-old aspiring thespian can meander about the African American Heritage Trail, beginning on the Deuces and ending in the Cultural Connectors, doing a class field trip, learning about the rich African American history of the city of St. Pete, while exploring the sites of the Cultural Arts Promenade, and finally visualizing themselves on stage one day, standing behind a camera at Booker Music Hall. A truly inclusive community plan for all. In order for us to bring this visualization to reality, the site programming before you is critical, but nowhere near as critical as the intentional equity programming for this project. Good evening. My name is Andrick Frazier, President and CEO of Bet Source Consulting. The Bet Source team was responsible for laying the framework around the development's intentional equity plan. An intentional equity plan designed to deliver the Hans Reyes team's commitment to the City of St. Petersburg's Community Benefit Agreement. Over the course of the next 20 years, what is now 63 acres of parking and unmaintained waterway will give birth to some 5,400 residential units on site, over 2 million square feet of office and retail space, and civic uses that include 14 acres of green space and the Woodson African American Museum. The current plan's first priority of development will focus east of Brooker Creek, with an anticipated 2028 delivery of nearly 700 residential units, including 100 units of senior affordable housing, Brooker Music Hall, one full-service hotel, the Woodson African American Museum, and 40,000 square feet of office and retail space. In order to execute the delivery of the plan programming for the historic gas plant district development, an able-bodied workforce has to be identified, trained, and cultivated. This workforce will need supporting infrastructure such as access to affordable housing, quality childcare, education, and small business support. Items such as these were identified through a study directed by the City of St. Pete. The study laid out 5 pathways of economic equity: employment, home ownership, business growth, and generational wealth. Our community benefits program is geared specifically towards these pathways. We have identified programming in the following areas that is supported with a project investment of $50 million from the Hines Reyes Development Team. A $15 million commitment to restorative home ownership and occupancy through the City of St. Pete's Housing for All program. A $750,000 commitment to community outreach through our Restorative Conversations program. A $13 million commitment to minority, women, and small business generation and growth through our restorative enterprise programming. A $3.75 million commitment to workforce development through our talent pipeline programming, and a $17.5 million commitment to education through our restorative pipeline programming. This $50 million investment will have a strategic focus on the citizens of South St. Pete and is in place to fuel the flight towards generational wealth for those citizens and residents of South St. Pete. This focus on future workforce development and minority women and small-owned businesses will help us deliver on our commitment to an estimated $500 million of supply diversity spend for the historic gas plant development. In speaking to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, U.S. Senator Raphael Warnock stressed the importance of access to affordable housing. The pathway to housing should be fair and equitable for everyone. And access to affordable housing is the infrastructure people in our communities need to elevate families into the working class and middle class. It is the foundation that helps people support their families and contribute to their economies. Of the 6,000 residential units planned for the historic gas plant development, 1,200 of those units will be dedicated to affordable housing, with a minimum of 600 units being located on site. This will provide high-quality living space in close proximity to such amenities as the PSTA Sunrunner, the Pinellas Trail, and a neighborhood grocer. We also understand that there is a need throughout the city for additional affordable housing, which is why our plan also includes development of 600 off-site units, which will be spread across St. Pete to further drive access to vital supportive infrastructure necessary to support healthy families. These 1,200 units will help alleviate the housing burdens for our teachers, our first responders, our hospitality workers, our sanitation specialists, our maintenance workers, and office system specialists, along with their families. The ability to provide housing that requires less than 30% of a household's monthly income can open pathways towards home ownership, which is the key stepping stone in establishing generational wealth. Our affordable housing stock also includes space for our most revered class, our seniors. Our current plan has the first on-site affordable housing unit dedicated to our 55 and over residents, which will come online as part of phase one. It is also extremely important to our team and the City of St. Pete that housing affordability is here to stay. That is why the city will own the land that is dedicated to affordable housing units and will be leased to our team on a 99-year lease. Capacity building is also important to us. The ability to connect with our youth through on and off-site programming is key to creating the bench strength that we will be needing to achieve our equity goals. Last month, we spent half a day with students from Melrose Elementary, John Hopkins Middle School, and Lakewood High School answering questions about the future development and the job opportunities that will be awaiting these eager future workforce people. This Friday, we'll be hosting 25 students from St. Pete Technical College at the TROP, who are currently receiving various training and certifications in culinary arts, TV production, HVAC operations and maintenance, construction, plumbing, electrical systems, and CAD drawing. These are all students that could be employed on the historic gas plant development project someday. Continued partnerships with Pinellas County Schools, St. Pete College, USF St. Pete, and various technical trade academies will also lend to a prepared workforce of our youth, while entities such as the Pinellas County Urban League, the Foundation for Healthy St. Pete, and the Tampa Bay Black Business Investment Corporation will help guide our adult workforce and entrepreneurship creation and growth. Lastly, communication and engaged conversations with our community will be an ongoing focus of our team. meeting stakeholders where they are, and utilizing various conduits of free-flowing dialogue will be the basis of our Restorative Conversations programming. This will include a welcome center that will be located on site, open to all, displaying updated information about the project, including job opportunities, project stats, and information regarding tours. We are also committed to be physically present, hosting community meetings, job fairs, business expos with the city and our project partners. To receive current and ongoing information about the project, please feel free to visit www.raysbaseball.com/here to stay and register. We look forward to receiving feedback from this committee and the community at large. I will now ask Rays President Brian Aull to come up for closing remarks.
Thank you, Andrick. Thank you, everyone. We are so excited about this. This is an incredibly unique opportunity. There is nothing of this size, scope, and ambition going on anywhere in the country and probably the world. It is a project unequaled anywhere. We have the opportunity together, and I mean together, meaning everyone in this room, everyone in this city, to show how a public-private partnership can fulfill past promises unkept, can promote racial and social equity, can address the housing crisis, can demonstrate the need for climate-sensitive building, can rethink the way that we do workforce development, and can be thoughtful about how we distribute opportunities. It is an absolutely enormous task that depends on support from every corner of the city. The Rays have done so much of which I'm proud over our many years here, but maybe assembling this team to take on this project is the thing that I find the most impressive. That the folks up here on the dais with me today, that the other members of our team would lend their talents, their reputations, their trust, the full backing of their organizations to help us all do this together is as good an endorsement as I could ever ask for. We know that we will not be perfect, but we will give everything that we have. We will work as hard as we can, because together we believe that we can accomplish something truly special here. To have earned the support from our mayor, from our county and our county commission, from so many former residents of the gas plant district, from so many businesses and community groups, from so many individuals out there, that is what has given us the conviction and the confidence to move forward with this enormous collective investment that we're making to bet on our futures being tied together for the better. We look forward to all your feedback, and we thank you for this opportunity to speak tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Knowledge really is power, and we got a lot of information. Another round of applause for the Hines Rays team representing the Hines Historic Gas Plant Partnership. We want to transition now to the public comment period, and just a couple of reminders, if you would like to speak publicly tonight, we need you to register. We have our staff members in the back of the room, so please meet with them so that you can register. We want to make sure anyone who has a desire to speak has the opportunity to be heard here from the microphone and the podium just to my left. Also, again, some of you may have some printed documentation in your hand that says you have until December 29th to make your voices heard online or through a printed form. We've extended that to December 31st, so you have until the end of the month. So note, you have until December 31st to continue sharing that feedback so that we can get it to the CBAC, the Community Benefits Advisory Committee. To transition to the public comment period, I want to bring up my colleague, Brian Caper, our Economic and Workforce Development Director, and he'll share more with you on how this will work. Brian, thank you for everything you've been doing over the last several months.
Thank you, Erica. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the City Development Administration, welcome to tonight's Community Benefits Information Session. I'd like to have a special thank you to Mayor Welch, to Council Chair Gabbard, to City Council, to the Hines Historic Gas Plant Partnership, to the Community Benefits Advisory Committee, and to members of the community for joining us here this evening. I'd like to take a moment as we transition to the next part of tonight's program to walk you through the public input process. Everyone in the audience should have checked in at one of the tables in the back of the room. When you registered, you were assigned a number. That number has been entered into a random number generator that will select the speakers for this evening. We will announce up to three names at a time. If your name is called, please go to the speaker check-in at the front of the room and check in with our team. Bennett, yeah, thank you, over there. We have chairs set up for those who are waiting to for their turn to speak. Speakers will have 3 minutes at the podium. A countdown timer will be visible to the speaker on the floor monitor, which is right in front of the podium. Please note that we will hold tight to the 3 minute time frame. Also note that speakers will only have one chance to speak this evening. Let me repeat those instructions for clarity. We will announce up to three names at a time. If your name is called, please come to the front of the room and check in with our speaker check-in team. We have chairs set up for those that are waiting their turn to speak. Once it's your turn, please stand up and take your 3 minutes at the podium. A countdown timer will be visible to each speaker at the floor monitor. The microphone will be muted at the 3 minute mark for each speaker. We will continue collecting input from the public with the goal of ending promptly at 8:30 p.m. And now we will announce the first six speakers of the evening. Please listen carefully for your name to be called.
Hello, hello. All right, so I'm gonna list three speakers to come up and then three to be on deck right up here. So let's bring down Robin Davidov, Lorna Perez, Frank Cirillo. Please come check in with us. And then on deck, we'll have Madison Rice, Jay Ferguson, Laura Ibrahim. All right, I'll repeat. Robin Davidov, Lorna Perez, Frank Cirillo, Madison Rice, Jay Ferguson, Laura Ibrahim.
I have a question. The term sheet states that the Ray's Hines team can wait until 2030 and pay a penalty if they choose not to build 600 units of affordable housing. The city promised to provide these units in exchange for a much reduced land sale price. Taxpayers also need to know the housing cost for the new housing, because the term affordable means different things to different people. There's a lot of apartments on Beach Drive that are affordable, but not for me. For example, in a recent Hines development in Washington, D.C., a very small 600 square foot studio apartment is being sold today for $450,000, or $1,800 a month, not including parking. So I think it's taxpayers who are paying for this deserve to know what the cost is going to be for the housing on the land which they've provided a pretty generous subsidy. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's bring up Lorna to the podium.
Hi. I love St. Pete. It's my favorite place in Florida, and I chose to live here because of its heart, its people, its uniqueness, and I wanted to make this my permanent home. As a second generation Latina, the American dream is already statistically lower to attain for me, and every day that dream gets further and further from reality. You talk about affordable housing, but I don't see it. My rent has more than doubled in the past 5 years. For a single woman who desires more than anything to have my own family and home, I don't see it as possible anymore. The stadium deal that our tax dollars will be used to fund is not where my heart is or many of my fellow residents' hearts are at. At this point right now, we're focused on surviving, not enjoying the city. This benefits the already rich. Someone here mentioned that they want this area to be comparable to the Florida Southeast. Over the past few years, I've heard people start calling it St. Miamisburg. In Miami, the median home price went up 63% in just the past 3 years, and lifelong Miamians have moved away. Is this what we want for St. Pete? I've seen the working class here get pushed out, fellow artists' friends having to move and uproot their whole lives for the city to accommodate yet another cookie-cutter luxury high-rise that they have no way to afford to live in. And in the past decade, St. Pete lost more than 4,000 black residents, according to the U.S. Census. This new development with 5,000 luxury condos continues this trend of attacking our most underrepresented citizens, and it's showing us that our elected representatives really don't care about this. Only 23% of housing on this project is expected to be affordable housing, with more than a third of that being off-site. And this, quote, affordable housing is sitting at 80% of the area median income, which doesn't even meet the needs of the city's existing low-income people. Different organizations from all over the city are here, clamoring for you to listen to our most vulnerable. Please keep a strong workforce in the city. Don't push us out. Don't let us drown. With this decision to use our hard-earned money to fund something that provenly only 3% of residents will use a year, St. Pete becomes more and more heartless. We are asking you to keep St. Pete's heart.
Thank you, Lorna. Let's bring up Frank Cirillo, please.
As a kid who grew up playing baseball all the way through high school in Florida, I loved the sport. But now as an adult, a Johns Hopkins trained economist and a member of this community of which I love, the data is clear. Using public funds for stadium development is a bad economic investment for the city and for the taxpayers. The Brookings Institute, the St. Louis Fed, numerous economic journals have peer-reviewed articles on the negative returns of investment on public funds for stadium use. Multiple cities, including Baltimore, where Camden Yards is located, and is just a few years older than our TROP, have followed the numbers and have shot down the idea of using public funds for private stadiums. However, if this was purely about the numbers, we wouldn't be here. I won't use my time to go into the details about the city's conservative forecast of using 4.75% interest for financing the deal and how this could harm the city's finances and all the other lost opportunity costs the city could use that money for. Let it be known that myself and other community members will put every part of this deal under the microscope. This is clearly a political decision. Just because prior administrations and city councils have been hesitant to act does not mean the city should rush through a deal. Clearly, money talks, and you don't have to look very far to understand why this administration has given Heinz Rays such a sweetheart deal. Baseball's median age viewer is 57 and only growing older. The Rays have one of the worst attendance records in MLB, 27 out of 30. There's a horrible bottleneck created by the local geography of St. Pete, connecting it to the Tampa area media market. And selling the land for well under market value are just some of the many reasons this is a bad proposal. If the deal goes through, I strongly urge the city to demand extreme legal clawbacks to make sure Stuart Steinbrenner doesn't take our public tax dollars and just use them to sell the team out from underneath us, and or make sure that we don't break all the deals that have just been promised to us. In closing, using taxpayer dollars to subsidize private industry on a community project with such negative returns should not be done, and the Rays owners have plenty of money to pay for it any redevelopment themselves. Please do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. At this time, I'm gonna call up the next three speakers to get in the queue to move things along. So we have Laura Ibrahim, Tamika Oliver, Warren Willingham, if you can come check in with us. And then Madison, take it away at the podium.
Hi, everyone. I just want to start by saying that the Rays and Heinz
are a corporation. Their job is to make as much profit as possible, which means taking more than they give. And they're going to fight tooth and nail to profit as much as they can. That's just how corporations work. The only thing that I ask is that the city fights with just as much audacity to get us what we need as they're gonna fight for what they want. I'm sorry, I lost my spot. People have already mentioned that studies show that public subsidies in stadiums don't make sense. I won't belabor that point. Contrary to what Michael Harrison, senior managing director of Heinz, said in a public meeting, St. Pete does attract people like a magnet. I don't think they're moving here because the Rays are here. I think they're moving here because of our beautiful public parks, our pier, our culture, our food, our people, our art. People, St. Pete is a great city, independent of the Rays. They should be asking us to stay here, not the other way around. We should demand more affordable housing on site. I thought the whole point of this was to fix the displacement that we already did, but we're trying to put affordable housing off site? That doesn't make any sense. We should demand that the Rays pay the full value for the land up front and not in a bunch of little incremental payments with mystery net present values. We should demand profit sharing, and we should demand no subsidy. If we make these demands and they agree, that's perfect. That's the outcome we want. If they want to stay and work with us, I'll welcome it. But if they say no, good riddance. We'll survive. In fact, the city will thrive without them, and the site will be developed regardless. It's 86 acres of downtown. The possibilities are literally endless. We can do whatever we want. I would much rather that we make demands consistent with the absolute best outcome for our citizens than lay down and succumb to a uniquely bad deal for the sake of keeping a baseball team that we don't even need. This is not over yet, as much as people will make you think. I implore everyone here, you obviously care because you showed up, to learn as much about this deal as you can and talk to your city councilors, because they get to approve or deny the deal. Thank you.
Thank you, Madison. Up next, Jay.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jay Ferguson. I'm with the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. I'm also with West Central Florida CLC, okay? I'm here tonight because we have apprenticeship programs that are state certified that train the community and help them be a part of the workforce that Heinz is saying that they're trying to produce. We voiced concerns about the apprenticeship aspects of CBA ordinances at council and CBAC meetings. We've seen the city staff say that what we're asking for is possible. However, we failed in the past to see that action backed up. For example, the community benefits impact report does not state how Heinz Rays ensures that contractors and subcontractors have proof of participation in registered apprenticeships. The city of Tampa, however, has used eBuilder software to require proof of participation in registered apprenticeships as a part of the bid process. So we're here tonight asking, will Heinz Rays commit to a similar requirement in their bid process? The CBIR also states the utilization of FLDOE apprentices, but there's no commitment to a percentage. Given the city's apprenticeship ordinance of 15% apprentice utilization, any equitable project ought to meet or exceed that benchmark. So we also ask, will Heinz Ray commit to meeting and exceeding that threshold? What does enforcement look like for this apprenticeship ordinance? Standard within current city apprenticeship ordinance, failure to comply can result in withholding of retainage and can include debarment from bidding on future City of St. Petersburg contracts. So we also ask, will Heinz Rays commit to this enforcement standard and penalty? We don't really expect that they're going to give an answer right now, but we were hoping that they're listening and maybe think of these thoughts. We have apprenticeship programs here in the city, in the county, in the state that are already registered, that are already training people of the community. So I would think that that would be an easy fit for them to partnership with people who are already here trying to build for the community. And that's pretty much all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. I'm going to ask the next three speakers to come check in with us over here in the corner. Mary Beth Farnham, Mary Ellen Markuski, Betsy Wells. Thank you. And then up next to speak is Laura Ibrahim.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak. I've been living here for 3 years, and I love it very much. I am a tree hugger and a tree planter, and I care very much about our environmental impact. I also think it's vital to guarantee that residents have a fair chance to bid on jobs involved with this development project. Avoiding predetermined agreements behind closed doors and examining environmental, social, and governance considerations, let's emphasize the social impact. Our community houses numerous creative minds capable of positively shaping development because they are part of and deeply understand our town. Retaining jobs within our city is pivotal for sustained economic growth. It not only bolsters local employment opportunities, but also stimulates our local economy. Furthermore, a robust job market enhances community stability, attracts skilled talent, and generates a positive cycle of investment, ultimately contributing to the overall prosperity of our city. Persistently outsourcing contributes to an ongoing imbalance. It can lead to job loss in the local community, eroding economic stability and fostering dependence on external sources. By minimizing outsourcing and promoting local employment, we can strive for a more balanced and resilient economy ecosystem within our city. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Up next, Tamika.
Hello. I'm seeing too many discrepancies on what they're saying and what the proposal is saying, so I'm not trusting that they're going to back up what they're saying, so I don't think it's a good idea. I feel like it's going to bring the cost of living up, and thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Tamika. Warren, you're up.
Hey, Warren Willingham. God, what an incredible deal, but only for the Rays. We're selling the land for $200 million under value. St. Pete is set to give them nearly $300 million. Pinellas County is also set to give them about $300 million. We fell for the stadium grift decades ago. We now have decades of research showing that our city will never receive the benefits of this unprecedented subsidy. The proposed affordable unit count is abysmal for the amount of land that we are donating to them, and even worse now that they are insisting on cheaping out and moving much of the housing off-site. My St. Pete native friends are moving away because I cannot afford to live here anymore. We need affordable housing, not what amounts to an outdoor mall. Please tell your city council member that you do not support this. They can vote this down. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three to come check in with me here is James Trimarco, Brian Nathan, and Phyllis Young. And then up next at the podium is Mary Beth Farnham.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. I am Mary Beth Farnham. I am the business community liaison for Pinellas County Job Corps. We are located at the corner of 22nd Street South and 5th Avenue South. That means we're within walking distance of Tropicana Field and across the street from the Warehouse Arts District. We are your neighbor, and we are invested in becoming a part of the Gas Plant District Redevelopment Project. If you haven't heard of us, Pinellas County Job Corps is an 18-acre training facility We provide tuition-free training for income-eligible youth from ages 16 to 24. We meet the youth where they are at. That means if they need help in getting a high school diploma, we help with that. If they need help in getting their driver's license, we help with that. But most importantly, we offer 8 different trades. 4 of them are healthcare related, but the 4 we're here to talk about today are construction related. We offer training in plumbing, carpentry, facility, maintenance, and electrical. This is all important to the project, and we would like to be a part of this. At capacity, we serve 300 students. It's a self-paced program with new graduates happening year-round. Our mission is not only to train these youth, but to help them get internships, apprenticeships, and jobs. I'm here today to make sure you know that we are here, ready to talk. We already have the beginning of what we hope will become an even stronger relationship with the Tampa Bay Rays. They gave a paid internship to a facility maintenance student that they liked enough to want to hire him, and we're hoping to have another student start there soon. They also help provide students with what we call leisure time employment, working concession stands and things during the games. So it's been a good relationship, which we hope will build even further. I would like to invite contractors and other partners in this venture to come to our campus and to see our classes in action, to see our instructors in action and how much our students can do. We are here to make a difference in our students' lives, and we can make a difference in this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Mary Ellen, you're up.
Section 11.01 of the City of St. Petersburg Historic Gas Plant Site Request for Proposal, issued on August 26, 2022, presented a mixed-income community as a guiding principle of development for the area. The Hines Way's proposal only allocates a small amount of developed units on-site as affordable housing units, some of which are 80% or more of the area median income. This is a significant threshold for low-income families to overcome, and this is not a significant commitment by the Rays-Hines proposal for affordable housing. This does not meet the needs of the City of St. Petersburg's existing community and is an egregious use of public funds for private gain. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. Betsy Wells, the floor is yours.
Hi, good evening. The money to repay the stadium bonds and interest will come from tax increment financing. That means that some part of property taxes paid by downtown residents will be diverted to pay the bond debt. Services will still have to be provided, so will taxpayers also be required to pay additional taxes to make up for lost city revenue? Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy. James?
Hi, everybody. Good evening. I'm James. I'm from here. This is my hometown. I've always been proud to be from St. Pete. It's an absolute jewel in every way, but not everything is well here. The city lost 7% of its black population over the past 10 years, according to the U.S. Census. About a quarter of St. Pete tenants pay 50% of their household income in rent alone before taxes income, and 1 in 20 tenant households get evicted every year. Typically, by the time things are this hard for working people in a city, there is no way of getting it back. You know, San Francisco, New York, etc. Here, though, we have one chance, and one chance alone. That chance is the Tropicana Field development site. Unfortunately, this plan squanders that chance. In a time when luxury condos are going up all over downtown, it adds another 4,841 luxury condos. These pricey units will just contribute to the sky rocketing housing prices across the city. And what we really need, guys, is 1 out of 3 units affordable, because if you look at the existing population of St. Pete, about 1/3 of the households would be at like 60% AMI or so. So if you build it with less than that, then you're pushing us out. I've been in this conversation for a little while. I came to the community conversations that happened last summer. They asked us to dream big there. The city officials asked us to dream big, and we did. So people talked about affordable housing and workforce opportunities, and they talked about local ownership and control in particular, I remember. Nobody dreamed of 5,000 luxury condos and a publicly funded stadium. It feels kind of like the city has made up its mind and that they only listen to the Rays. But when I've gone as a community organizer and knocked on doors in St. Pete on this, I find that most of my neighbors actually agree with me that we can do better and that we should ask for more. Over the months to come, I'll be standing with all of the organizations that are allied for housing justice and working to spread awareness and opposition to this plan. I hope that you'll join us. You can sign our petition at nostadiumsubsidy.org.
Thank you, James. I'm going to ask the next 3 speakers in the queue to come check in with us. That'll be Dr. Basha Jordan Jr., Geneva Nelson, and Jeremy Tolberg. Up next to speak, Brian Nathan.
Good evening. My name is Brian Nathan. I'm with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I represent electricians all across the Tampa Bay area, and including St. Pete. I am also on the executive board of the Central Labor Council, representing all unionized workers in this area. We have some concerns regarding the apprenticeship ordinance and how it's implemented. Jay spoke to most of those concerns earlier. I'd like to give you a little bit of context with that regarding St. Pete and how the apprenticeship ordinance has been implemented in the past, and the simple fact is that it hasn't. I can point to the Ajax paving project, where we had no input, there was no ask about for signatory contractors, for people involved in registered apprentices. The decision was made, and it was done before we even got to speak. The Moffitt building, again, it was the same process. The decision was made, there was no input, it just happened. So going forward, like Jay said, we'd like to see Rays and Hines commit to the 15% apprenticeable hours that already exists on the books. It is an ordinance in the city. It is the law. But just like in Tampa, they like to go around it as much as possible. If you want to build a middle class, rebuild a middle class in St. Pete, it starts with good paying jobs. In my humble opinion, union jobs. We pay not just survivable wages, we pay living wages. Our journeyman electricians make $34 an hour. Employers pay for their health care. They have 3 pensions. Where are you going to find that anywhere else? We have 300 apprentices just in the electricians union. We have 1,200 working members in the Tampa Bay area that can man this job. Hell, we built Tropicana Stadium. My current business manager, as an apprentice, worked on that. We can do the work. All the trades can. There is not a single trade that you need to do this project that we cannot provide apprentices for to meet those requirements. And like Jay said, we've talked to the city about these issues in the past. We've gone to the community benefits meetings in the past, and we've told all this stuff can be done. We have not seen any action. We don't hear back. So while I am hopeful, I am concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Phyllis, you now have the floor.
Good evening. My name is Phyllis Young. I am a native of St. Petersburg. I grew up in the Tropicana Field area at 1743 Fifth Avenue South, right where the parking lot is for the Rays. My interest tonight is affordable housing. And I would like to request of the city those houses that are affordable, that they are at 80% AMI as opposed to market value, which would be probably about $120 AMI, which is about $2,200, $2,300 a month rent. I'm very interested in what happens with this project, because I am vested. This is my neighborhood. That's where I grew up. That's where my family grew up. And I would love to see an affordability factor built in. 80% AMI, I fit into that category. And again, that is my vested interest. And I would love to see the city work harder at real affordability, because nowadays when you say affordable, affordable for who? Think about it.
Thank you, Phyllis. Dr. Basha Jordan Jr., you have the floor.
I'm Dr. Basha P. Jordan Jr., pastor and founder of Hope Alive Outreach. And giving honor to God, I thank you, Mr. Mayor, for allowing us to have this opportunity of input in this magnanimous adventure. The first thing I want to say is it has been noted that African Americans were the first and the greatest number of individuals who have been displaced in this whole process. African American businesses were the ones who were displaced or closed. African American families were the ones who were divided. And so when this project is all said and done, everyone ought to be able to look at this and say African Americans have been the ones who have benefited from this more than anyone else. Promises were made. Promises were broken. Second thing I want to touch on, and that is, it has been stated that there is to be a 30% minority participation in the developers and contractors for this project. Recently, there was a $93 million project done for the Jordan Park redevelopment. In that contract, it was 30% minority participation was the goal. When the project was about halfway through, I had a conversation with the CEO, Mike Lundy, and he notified me that there were only 18% minority participation. I formulated a group of pastors and community leaders, and we met with the developers. And for 9 months, we struggled to get them to do what was promised. When we came in, it was at 18%. The next month after we met, it was at 17%. And so I started raising my voice. African Americans, we need to raise our voices. And at the end of the project, we were notified that it had gone up to 22%. My recommendation is that there be 50%, at least 50% minority participation. Why? Because all over America, 30% is always said and 30% is never delivered. So why not shoot higher so we can fall higher. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jordan. Just one final appeal. We have five speakers remaining, equating to about 15 minutes. We have this program lasting until 8:30 if we have people willing to speak for the public comment period. So one last appeal, anyone considering or contemplating speaking, I encourage you to go register to speak in the back of the room. As of right now, we have five speakers remaining. We've had 20 so far. So just want to remind you, anyone contemplating sharing their thoughts, raising their voices, making their opinions known, you have the opportunity publicly tonight. Please just go to the back of the room with one of our staff members and register. As of right now, we have five remaining speakers.
Alrighty. So if the next three people can check in with us over here, Dylan Dames, Elise Hazard, and Kenneth Mack. And then up next to speak, Geneva Nelson.
I've been a resident of St. Pete since 2005. I've been a baseball fan since 1964 and lived all over the United States. I love going to Rays games. I go to as many as I can, and I love that they're here. But I have to say, nobody is talking about the real reason attendance is low at Rays games. You have to have a certain number of population within driving range of a stadium to be able to support it. We would have that if we had all of Pinellas County and Tampa, but the people in Tampa have a psychological block that they had long before the Rays came here. They do not cross the bridge. They feel like they have everything they need in Tampa and there's no reason to ever come over here. So we don't have enough people in Pinellas County to support the Rays for them ever to have any more attendance, much more attendance than they have now. Nobody talks about this. But I will say also what I think is most important if this project does go through. I'm glad you're addressing the housing issue, but you are not addressing the crisis. We all know we are having a housing crisis here. The crisis is not for the wealthy. It is for the low-income and middle-income people. And people have asked, what is affordable housing? Affordable housing is when you pay no more than 33% of your income for decent housing. There's a huge number of people in Pinellas County who can get housing who are paying more than 50% of their income. 90% of the people who pay more than 50% of their income for housing, their wages are 80% or below area median income. 100% of the housing for this project needs to be for people who are at 80% or below area median income. Wealthy people do not need more high-rises. They're building more and more all over St. Pete without you. I cannot see giving public money to more luxury high-rises when they are not in crisis. The rest of us are in crisis.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jeremy. I'm a native Floridian. I've lived in St. Pete for 20 years now. A lot of us in this community have been paying attention to this proposal. People much smarter than myself have been digging into the real numbers behind the deal. I'd like to share what they've learned. First, let's talk about the actual amounts of money. The city's telling us that it's only $300 million, but the estimated amount is even larger. The real amount is closer to $1 billion for the city alone. That includes debt payments to borrow the total money. That includes publicly owned land being given to the team at almost half of its estimated value, tax breaks, and other hidden maintenance costs and lost revenues. The team will pay no rent to the city, will share no revenue, and will likely keep all money from naming rights, non-baseball events, broadcast rights, gambling profits, and more. All of this for a team worth $1.2 billion. To relocate a stadium that is still being paid for. The mayor and the city council wants to max out the city's credit cards for 30 years to pay for this deal. In return, they claim we'll get employment, affordable housing, and a huge boost for the local economy. All of these promises are 100% false. Nearly every study done on public stadium deals found they usually negatively affect local businesses and have almost no impact on jobs.
The affordable housing being promised is a tiny portion of the development. It can be located away from the stadium district, and it won't be completed for decades. And that $50 million in community benefits amounts to about 0.04% of the value of this deal. The Atlanta Stadium that the mayor just recently toured and promoted as a success is losing an estimated $15 million a year, and that's in an area with four times our population. The same is true of nearly every publicly financed stadium deal. One reason this gas plant district is historic is because of the injustices done to the residents of that area. Their homes and businesses were taken by force and destroyed for a privately owned building. In that regards, this proposal is not historic, but is history repeating itself. Money and property being taken from everyone in the city and given to a private corporation. Our elected officials are supposed to be representing all of us and looking out for our financial security. Supporting this deal means no money for city resources and emergency services. It means no money for future catastrophes that could affect our city, and it means giving away money and property that belongs to you, your kids, and your grandkids. This deal is a bad, wrong deal. It's wrong for everyone living and working in this community. It's wrong because it threatens the financial safety of the city for decades to come. These teams earn billions because they have the influence and money to make deals that always benefit them in the end. We have to unite as a city and as a community. We have to speak up loudly and protect the well-being of everyone living in this city. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Dylan, you have the floor.
Hey friends, my name is Dylan Dames, here on behalf of Faith in Florida and the residents we represent, as well as progressive people of faith we're connected to. I want to thank the mayor's administration and city council for their commitment to hearing from the public. The expansion of public input opportunities over the past year is only growing our numbers and prompting more faith in city leadership. We have faith that the city can take their commitments even further. I see us retaining ownership of stadium acreage and property where standalone units are built. I see green space. I see that private investment overwhelms that of the public. And again, I see the mayor and city and the city reaching out to the public continually. For that, we are grateful, but we still worry about the redevelopment itself matching its progressive packaging. For example, the levels of rent restriction on affordable units still don't serve people making less than $20 an hour, which is the majority of my service industry friends and some of the black seniors that we organize. These units are not only slightly missing the mark, but they also make up less than a quarter of the total units being developed. We fear what this kind of split will attract to the site. With only 600 rent-restricted units on site and no binding promise of at what point in the 30-year development these units will go up, we don't have faith that we can actually get housing insecure folks into these homes anytime soon. I know there's a lot of talk about how concerned residents are late to the party and how this deal is way past its capacity to change shape, but I don't believe that. This is a room full of bright minds and experienced leaders, and a high-stakes historic redevelopment like the one we're discussing tonight deserves to be agonized over. It deserves to be drawn out. I know we're tired, leaders and residents alike, but this opportunity deserves to be tired over. I urge the city to withhold their support of these housing terms, city council that is, until said terms have moved closer to residents' need. And I welcome the Hines-Reyes team and the mayor's administration to take one more swing at affordable housing. To invoke city research from one community plan, fewer than 30% of black folks in St. Pete can afford the workplace and affordability numbers proposed in this deal. Ultimately, this will make the area even less racially diverse than it is now. I'd like to close this comment with an eagerness for the developer agreement so that the community can be sure about the follow-through. So far, there has been contemplations of the developer paying out of having to build affordable units, as well as a confession that they may not even be able to put the units up, the standalone rent-restricted units, at all, should they not secure enough subsidies, incentive grants, things of that nature. These clauses definitely concern us. Between now and the time when council approves this, whether that's sooner or later, I'll be praying and speaking in favor of rent burden folks and in favor for more for the community and hopefully a new chapter in a pattern of disappointing relationships between developers and residents here in St. Pete. Thank you so much for your time and thank you for your commitments to residents.
Thank you, Dylan. Elise, you have the floor.
It's Elise Hazard, over 30-year resident here in St. Petersburg. I guess the comments that have not been said yet, I don't want to repeat everyone else's words, but I do want to focus on the basic science of the numbers. This just does not pencil out. It's a bad proposal. There is a huge overtone of fiscal irresponsibility to this. The binding responsibility that the city has to its residents and what kind of fiscal commitments we're going to have to make for a very long time because of this type of proposal are just wrong. I don't think this is a done deal. I think everybody needs to think very carefully about this. There are an awful lot of important things that need to happen in this city, and we will be crippled financially if we go into this type of deal. It is just blatantly wrong. I'm sorry if there are other people in the community that have a very strong feeling, but I don't really, we have had problems keeping that stadium full or attendance minimum. Other civic arenas, like even just the presence at Baywalk, a lot of failed projects here in St. Pete. So if we can't learn by our past mistakes and stop having failed projects, that we don't need a ton more, I don't know what, dining and shopping options. We need things that are going to benefit the people in this community and not benefit some corporate entity. I'm happy for the people that Brian or the Braves or Hines, that they have a budget that they can look at this and say that'll be nice, but we don't have that kind of budget. We can't strap ourselves so far financially that we are going to miss big important things like infrastructure over funding this deal. I hope everyone will reach out to the council person and state the facts. This is a numeric equation. We cannot afford this. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise. We did receive a couple more requests to speak. So Francis Cotto, you want to come join us on the chairs here? And then up next to speak is Kenneth Mack.
Good evening. My name is Kenneth Mack, and I was born on Fifth Avenue here in the Gas Plant District. For the last 42 years, I've been away living in Texas, and so I just stood to say that I support this initiative. I've labored over the documents that were made available to us online. I remember being in Texas and looking at the documents, attending some of the Zoom calls and so forth, and I do think that this is a pretty solid proposal. There are pros and cons on both sides, and so there are valid points that people have stood and pointed out. But I wanted to share my experience with you. I lived in Houston, and I saw a similar thing happen when the Astrodome was replaced by Reliant and then also by Minute Maid Park. And I can tell you that those initiatives revitalized areas of the city. And I see the same thing happening here. Then when I moved to Dallas, I saw the same thing happen with the Cowboys Stadium, with Irving Stadium, and how it was replaced by AT&T Stadium. And then I saw the same thing happen with the now champion, what are they, the Texas Rangers. Yeah, I was pulling for the Rays, but anyway, I saw it happen with them when they went to Globe Life Park. So I saw it revitalize those areas as well. So I do think that this has an opportunity to help us all. I think what we have to do is position ourselves to take advantage of the opportunity that's here. That means schools, education, training, any businesses, entrepreneurs, position yourselves to take advantage of the opportunity that's here. And if you look at it from that perspective, I think all of us can benefit from it. So I just wanted to share that experience with you that it can help. It can revitalize these areas, but we've got to give it an opportunity and a chance to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenneth. Chris Steinacher, you have the floor.
Good evening. I am Chris Steinacher, President and CEO of the St. Petersburg Area Chamber of Commerce. Wasn't going to speak tonight, but there's a microphone in the room. I miscalled to him. I am concerned, too. I've been a resident of St. Pete for 35 years. I've raised my family here. My wife and I have a business here in town, and I have a job here as a St. Pete Chamber of Commerce. I am so concerned about this deal. If we don't do this deal, I am so concerned about St. Pete. We have momentum right now. If we lose this deal because we were looking for a better deal, I'm not sure when and how or what that would look like. I don't know that we would find another baseball team to come here and help us. I know we won't find another world-class developer like Hines because they're here now, and if we tell them to go, they're going to go, just like we'll that just as they will. And I'm not sure who will develop for us. While there have been great cases made about, hey, we can get more for the land, people who are going to pay more for that land aren't going to build affordable. They're going to build more of what they want. So we do lose control of that. So I believe that the city and the county and the Hines and Rays have answered all the questions that we talked about last year that were the promises made for this neighborhood and for this community. $50 million to make sure it goes into this community. You heard it outlined. But that $500 million for the impact of those employers and employees is huge. You just heard two union people come up and say, let's make sure we do more. I agree with them. Let's make sure we do more, and we do more for St. Pete. But I can't tell you that if this deal walks away today, it's going to be 5, 8, 10, 15 years before we build anything on that parking lot. And who's got that amount of time? How many more people will leave? If we get 600 units, that's 600 more than we didn't have on that. And 600 in their city where we do need them everywhere. You don't want to put all units in one place. I believe this is an amazing plan. I believe this is a plan that every other community in the country would say, wait, someone's developing that large, that big right now? Are you kidding me? Where are they getting the cash? Where are they getting their land? How are they putting that deal together? We have an opportunity to employ a lot of our residents, my kids, 17,000 jobs. That's what we need right now. That's what creates, you know how you get yourself out of affordability issues? You get better jobs, as you heard that union gentleman talk about. That's what we're offering here, and we're offering training and skill sets along the way. There's no other way we can do this in St. Pete. If we delay it today, or we delay it and we say, no, this is not enough, what will happen? Who's going to be the next group to say, no, we'll do something with it. We've got a lot of money. We're going to take it on. It's not going to happen. We're going to look at that gray parking lot, man. And we're the Sunshine City, man. And I really can't look at that gray parking lot for 10 more years. We've got a chance right now to get it going. Let's put a shovel in the ground next year, guys. We have that chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Francis, you have the floor.
Francis Cato, and I'm a resident for 70 years in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I do remember my mother-in-law lived in the gas plant area. She was an educator. I remember the Laura Park, where those families were displaced. And as Ms. Young said, affordable. Affordable for who? I've worked in social action agency for over 40 years, and I see each and every day families that cannot afford rent, they cannot afford electric and water. And so when you make the decision, I would hope that you would take in consideration those low-income clients and residents that are having each and every day problems in paying rent. So affordable, make it affordable for the low-income clients. Thank you.
I'll ask, you see me at the microphone, that means that was the last speaker, unless with a show of hand, is there anyone else who is contemplating speaking and wants to have a turn at the microphone? Show of hands. It's about 7:10. We will get you home a little earlier than we had planned, and I want to thank all the speakers. For the average ordinary person, it takes a lot of courage to come up and speak. And again, could our CBAC committee stand for me once again so that we can, because this was your first opportunity to speak to them, it will not be your last opportunity. There's several other times where you can provide feedback. moving forward from tonight. Again, there's an online form. We have a QR code here. Again, some of the forms say December 29th, but you have until December 31st. We extended that. So please go online, share your thoughts. There's so much power with the written word as well. And they have four meetings starting January 9th every Tuesday, and you will have the opportunity to speak to them as well. So thank you all for coming. We appreciate your feedback, and we want to continue to hear from you moving forward over the next few months. Please, again, there's also City Council. So have a safe drive home. Thank you so much for coming.
You have been listening to last evening's Community Benefit Advisory Council public hearing and information session on the historic gas plant redevelopment project, including a new stadium for the Tampa